Governor Rick Scott declares the state's opioid epidemic a public health emergency. Good Thursday morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app or podcast us on iTunes. You can stream us live now on our Facebook page, too. And just ahead, how doctors across the state and the governor and more are banding together to fight the raging opioid epidemic here in Florida. We want your calls on this right now at 549-2937. Then later, all about the success of a OneSpark winning startup business, plus the Spectator, weekend ideas for you, and a live in-studio performance from singer-songwriter Madison Carr. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, Governor Rick Scott has signed an emergency order to combat a massive public health problem in this state, the opioid epidemic. Now, Scott's action is going to allow the state to immediately draw down more than $27 million in federal funding awarded to Florida last month for prevention, treatment, and recovery services for opioid addiction. Local addiction and recovery specialists say that help can't come soon enough. They're fighting hard to come up with local problems to address this crisis and the deaths here in our area. This is a shocking problem. As the Duval County Medical Examiner has reported, a steady stream of bodies piling up at the local morgue due to opioid overdoses. So many, they can barely process them. So how widespread is this problem? What are local physicians doing? We begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome a doctor on the front lines of this. It's Dr. Raymond Palm, medical director at two local addiction treatment centers, Gateway Community Services and River Region Human Services. Dr. Palm is here in studio. Doctor, so good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
And joining us over the phone, Dr. Christine Caulfield. She's executive director with LSF Health Systems and is also engaged in combating this problem. Dr. Caulfield, thank you for being here.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
And we begin the hour with a closer look at the opioid epidemic as Governor Scott declares a state of emergency in Florida. We want your calls and questions at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, email your questions to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. We're already getting your tweets. Send them to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in as well on our Facebook page where this show streams live every morning. Dr. Palm, let's begin with you. What's your initial reaction to Rick Scott signing this emergency order around drawing down funds, immediate drawdown of federal funds to combat this epidemic?
Some sense of relief and a lot of gratitude.
Yeah, and why?
This emergency has been actually building over a couple of years. We're seeing it peak, but I don't think there's an end to the peak. Every day we don't do something, we're losing more and more lives. And without that funding, we're stalled.
And to try to get things moving, before this order came down from Tallahassee, you went before the city council a few weeks ago and proposed a pilot program to try to intervene when people come to the ER with a heroin or a fentanyl overdose. What would that program do?
So right now, what happens when an individual goes into the emergency department for any reason, but we're talking specifically about overdose right now, they're stabilized once they're revived, and then they're discharged. There might be given information about resources in the area, but they're left on their own. Fentanyl is such a powerful, powerful drug. Once the individual's feet hit the street, they go back to fentanyl. So it's a revolving door until they die. And that's when they show up at the morgue. So what we're trying to do with this pilot project is that first point of contact, being in the emergency department, immediately assess once they've been stabilized and intervene and begin the treatment process from the emergency department, not allowing their feet to hit the ground until they get into treatment, which will help them get into.
And we'll go to your calls on the opioid epidemic and the state of emergency declared in Florida in just a moment at 549-2937. Dr. Christine Caulfield on the line. You run LSF Health Systems, and you've been speaking about this as well. The contours of this crisis are truly astounding. In District 4 alone, here in our city, nearly 500 deaths due to opioids last year. That's nearly a 200% increase. And as recently as May 1, people could buy extremely dangerous doses of fentanyl online until China banned its manufacture, actually on March 1, for an affordable amount of money. What are you seeing from where you sit at LSF Health Systems?
Well, I'll tell you, Melissa, it has touched every county that we serve. Duval is certainly in the lead, if you will, for the deaths. But in our system of care, which consists of 23 counties and 47 outstanding behavioral health care organizations, not one organization has not been touched by this very dangerous epidemic, including our partners in the child welfare system. We have seen a spike of almost 30% of removals, children being removed from their homes as a result of their parents either using or overdosing and death. So these poor children and families are ripped apart, children traumatized, entering the child welfare system where it is already overburdened. So it is, from a systemic point of view, really touching every area that we serve, and it's frightening.
Now, the legislature is in session. They're talking about this. On Wednesday, the Senate passed a bill, Dr. Palm, that would impose tougher criminal penalties on people who traffic in fentanyl. It's often cut together with heroin, and that is what's spiking this incredible rise in overdose deaths. The sponsor of this bill is Senator Greg Stube. Take a quick listen here.
This bill creates criminal penalties for trafficking in fentanyl and synthetic drugs, allows a person to be charged with murder for causing a death through the distribution of fentanyl, and adds numerous fentanyl derivatives to Florida's controlled substances schedules to ensure all chemical variants of fentanyl are included.
Your reaction to that?
Every piece of action that we take at this point helps. However, I do need to say this. Over the decades of the prescription opioid epidemic, actually even before with heroin, we have tried to institute criminal proceedings, arrests, all sorts of judicial activity. That has not stemmed the tide. It hasn't gotten to the root of the addiction. But we need to continue to do that for the criminal element involved in this. But for those who actually have this disease of chemical dependence and are victim to fentanyl and other opioids, treatment is the only way we're really going to move forward.
Criminalizing addicts is not going to solve the problem.
Not at all. It hasn't.
And Dr. Caulfield, there's been so much discussion about the root causes of this epidemic. What are you seeing with your patient population?
Well, we're seeing, again, the disease of addiction. We're seeing patients that know the consequences of potentially dying from utilizing heroin that's laced with fentanyl and carfentanil. And the craving for this drug is so strong that all logic is off the table. The brain is hijacked. And these folks will do anything for the next hit. The detox and the after they have experienced the high and then the low, the craving for this drug surpasses all logic. They know that they have children they'll leave behind, but they just don't care. The craving for the drug, the next hit is their main focus.
And so, of course, from that, it seems to make sense, Dr. Palm, that we need to stop people from starting on this drug. People turn to opioids for a number of reasons, but at the root cause of it is pain, either physical pain or maybe psychological pain.
Yes, at the root cause, it is pain. Physical pain is one starting point for some. Psychological pain is a root cause for many. The addiction is a disease. It's not very different than diabetes or hypertension. There are neurochemical changes or differences in the brains of addicts and alcoholics that we're finding out more and more about.
And what about this new report out from the CDC just this week showing that deaths from opioids may be actually underestimated, that the more people are dying from this than even the official numbers show?
Well, there's no question. On two fronts. Number one, at the ME's office, they're not doing autopsies on everybody. Typically what happens is if there's a suspicion of crime or some type of criminal activity, they do an autopsy. But for many, there is none of that involved. Therefore, they don't even know the cause of death for the other bodies that don't have criminal activity. On the hospital side, in the emergency department, they're not doing urine drug testing, okay? So they're putting cause of death as various other things that actually, respiratory depression, heart failure.
Maybe even pneumonia.
And,
but that could be tied to it.
Absolutely. So at this point, the numbers we see, for as horrible as they are really underestimates.
All right, let's go to some of your calls on this. As Governor Scott declares a state of emergency in Florida as a way to try to combat the ever-worsening opioid epidemic, what are your questions and comments right now at 549-2937? Mick is on the north side. Hi, Mick. Good morning.
Morning. How are you doing today?
Okay, thanks.
Excellent. My question is there any way that the people in the Gateway program could maybe try to help limit these pain doctors that just prescribe pills for people who show up with money? You got addicts that go to the pain doctor, got cash, say they're hurt, and then they write them a prescription for pain pills that they in turn go and sell on the street.
Yeah, thank you, Mick. And Dr. Caulfield, we have a tweet about this too from Susan. She tweets the show, maybe we can start by stopping the over-prescribing of painkillers. Your thoughts?
Absolutely, and I know there has been a great effort in addressing the physicians that misuse their power and their privilege with over-diagnosing and then over-prescribing. So there are efforts to attack that from that front. However, what I think we really need to also focus on is that the opioids that are diagnosed and prescribed, if you will, are controlled substances. However, those on the street are laced with the carfentanil and fentanyl, and that's the issue where we're having this extreme rise in overdoses.
Now, Dr. Palm, in addition to Governor Scott's emergency order, the state surgeon general has issued a standing order for naloxone, the emergency treatment for opioid overdoses. Is that going to be helpful? And let me ask you, too, what about some other treatment options for addiction that, it's my understanding, are difficult for some patients to get?
Certainly. Naloxone is an immensely important piece to this puzzle. It reverses immediately the effect of the opiate on the system. So basically someone looks dead, they're not breathing, give them naloxone and they wake right up. They're in horrible withdrawal, but at least they're alive. So there are two levels to that. Giving naloxone to family members and friends of addicts, allow them to administer it at home, giving EMTs and EMS time to get there and start administering their own and maintaining that life-saving support. There are other treatments, pharmacologic treatments, buprenorphine, which is an opiate. However, it is very effective in reducing cravings, stopping withdrawal, and helping combat the fentanyl at the actual receptor site. There's also a monthly injection of opiate blocker, which also reduces cravings and combats the effect at the actual opiate receptor site, giving us at least some movement in the right direction and some distance between the individual and the drugs of abuse.
And you think that needs to be more widely available.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's not.
Well, the problem is people can't afford it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Chuck at the Beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hello, guys. I lost my son to fentanyl, but
I'm so sorry.
Let me clear my voice. Yeah. What I wanted to say was everything you guys are talking about, and I was watching a TED talk 2 years ago, and I hope your doctors know what I'm talking about. I can't believe they don't. But 15 years ago in Portugal, they had the same conversations you guys are having right now. And they did everything you're talking about right now. And you can go online and you can see this chart, and it's like a 45-degree angle that goes down to a right. That's how they reduced the number of people that were dying. It's everything you're talking about. So my frustration, and I think I have a right to be mad about this because I lost my son to it. It frustrates me that our government and our medical industry and our pharmaceutical industry didn't attack this problem 5 or 10 years ago.
Chuck, let me ask you, what did they do in Portugal that we're not doing here in the U.S.?
Everything you're talking about right now, everything you're talking about. They made the drugs. They stopped putting people in prison. They started treating people like it was a disease and counseling people. And they took all the money they were putting people in prison with, and they started treating it. And I wrote down this, addictive personality and dual diagnosis.
Yeah.
You can have 5 kids, and one will have an addictive personality, and one will have bipolar disease, and he's going to get on it. And once they get on it, it's almost impossible to get them off of it. My son was doing great. He was clean. He relapsed, yada, yada, yada. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about. And here, let me just say one other thing. And I said this the other day. The pharmaceutical industry put OxyContin in every kitchen cabinet in America, okay? If you leave a gun out and your child picks the gun up and kills himself, you're prosecutable. And at the hospitals, I will bet you that OxyContin is in a lock safe. But we put it in kitchen cabinets.
Sure.
And we've done that for 10 or 15 years.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah,
so
I hear you. And Chuck, I'm so sorry for your loss of your son.
Yeah, I understand. I understand it. But, I can handle I'll get on with it. Thanks,
I know. Guys. And thank you. And Dr. Caulfield, okay, so what Chuck is saying is that our response is too little, too late. And here's a comment on our Facebook page from Jim. The same thing, saying the governor's state of emergency, he says, is too little, too late. He's reacting to bad press. It's all a show. Just look at how he initially rejected the Rx drug database because of concern over privacy rights. He's only doing this now because he has to. And whether or not folks agree with that, what about their point that we've been too slow to react here?
You know, Chuck brings up a very, very good point. One that I would like to address is the funding issue. For those that aren't familiar with this very disturbing fact, Florida is 50th now in the nation for funding for behavioral health care services. So the lack of appropriate and adequate funding certainly has fueled the issue. Folks, you know, cannot get into treatment many times. There are waiting lists. We need to do better. And one thing that our wonderful citizens in Florida can do is contact your legislators. Let them know that this needs to be a priority, that we need more funding to attack this very, very disastrous epidemic.
And in
and
a
also,
bit of... go ahead.
Yes. I was just going to say that mental health, Chuck brought up co-occurring, dually diagnosed issues. These folks that are picking up and using oftentimes have a co-occurring mental health issue, and we need to be addressing both the addiction and the mental health disorder.
And in a rare bit of good news, let me just jump in, Dr. Caulfield.
Sure.
Congress just passed a bill to keep the government funded through September, and one of the rare bipartisan points of agreement they had was $100 million set aside to combat opioid addiction. So that just did pass the Congress, or at least it passed the House. Let's go now to Becky at the Beaches. Hey, Becky, go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. I'm a pharmacist here in Jacksonville, and I see it all the time. One of the ways I see this all beginning is, I don't mean to blame the parents, but maybe a parent has pain, and as Chuck said, the opioids are just kept in a bathroom cabinet, and young people, they like to party a little bit, so maybe they experiment, and this goes on, you know, and eventually they're addicted, and they can no longer get the opioids, so they have to resort to heroin. And it comes from the doctors prescribing way more medication than the patient perhaps needs. I had a personal experience. My husband had a hip replacement. They prescribed 200 oxycodone and 60 OxyContin. My husband was only in pain for 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
After that, he would literally say to me at night, and this is not a man that likes to take pills, he would say, he would mix a drink, and then he would say he was going to get his party on.
Right, because you do get high from those meds.
And I thought, I am a pharmacist. This is not going to happen. And I disposed of them.
Well, that's good, Becky. That was the right thing to do. Thank you for that call. Dr. Palm.
Yeah, the last two callers hit on very significant points, and I agree with both of them. Look, we have to do more about educating doctors. We have some uneducated doctors, we have some ignorant doctors, and yes, law enforcement has to get involved with the bad doctors because we have those too. We've got to attack the problem there. That problem has been there for quite a while, and that's a problem that is ongoing. The newest problem that sort of emerged from this is the one that's killing people. And that's the fentanyl problem. That's not a doctor problem. Mm-hmm. So there are two fronts we have to battle on at this time.
And Dr. Caulfield, what's your assessment of how all the local stakeholders are working together now on this here in Northeast Florida, where we have an incredibly high number of deaths being reported?
Yes, we are very blessed to be living in Duval County. I'll tell you, the community has definitely come together. Our Prevention Coalition, Drug Free Duval, is doing incredible work. Many of our stakeholders are on those committees. We've been attacking this for the last 2 years. So it was so impressive at the meeting yesterday at City Hall to see, you know, all the various groups coming together and really wanting to be part of the solution.
Let's go to Billy on the South Side now. Hi, Billy. Thanks for calling. Good morning.
Yes. I'd like to give my perspective as a current patient, surgical patient in the past 6 months, being prescribed oxycodone and having a very difficult time getting the medication approved through my insurance, which means that I'm completely out of pocket to the tune of about $1,500 a month. I have very good health insurance, which would normally pay for the medication, but because Blue Cross has a contract with a third-party agency.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Billy. Go ahead. Oh, we lost him. But he was talking about the difficulties that he had, Dr. Palm, and getting the medication and then maybe eventually weaning off of it. So we're hearing some really powerful calls with personal experience with this. What's the status of the pilot program now that you'd like to launch?
At this point, we're ready to go. We're ready to move on once the funding is in place. It'll take a couple of months to hire the necessary people and make sure all the players are doing the things they need to do and we're all coordinated. But on paper, and as we've discussed amongst all of our partners, everyone is very motivated to move forward as quickly as possible.
And certainly no time to lose. As the governor declares a state of emergency in Florida over the opioid crisis. Thank you both so much for joining us, Dr. Raymond Palm with Gateway and River Region, Dr. Christine Caulfield, LSF Health Systems. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
And much more still ahead later. Don't miss the live in studio performance from local singer-songwriter Madison Carr. But up next, how improving communication in the medical services field is saving lives. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, making sense of police shootings. This week, a number of cases moved forward involving white officers shooting black men. Convicting an officer is rare. What does the law actually say about police shootings? And what's being done to address or prevent these deadly encounters? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Radio Lab.
Take your marks!
Why do Kenyans always win all those races?
The Kenyans have done it again. One, two, and three.
And what happens to New York City's poop after it's pooped?
About 1.3 billion gallons every single day.
And why aren't kids afraid of quicksand anymore?
Well, what are you afraid of?
The alien in Pacific Rim. That would be totally more scary.
We'll have some answers on the next Radio Lab.
Saturdays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Jazz Night in America, Dee Dee Bridgewater, newly crowned NEA Jazz Master.
You know, it's just like all of a sudden people are saying I'm a jazz legend. I don't know what this means. I'm out here just trying to work.
With music from Songs of Freedom, a program curated by Ulysses Owens Jr.
Drive a man who made a life.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Keep on moving.
Welcome back. Well, it's estimated up to 1,000 people a day die in our healthcare system due to errors in technology and communication. Needless deaths. Improving patient outcomes through better clinical training and fixing that problem is the goal of a local company, B&G Educational Innovations. Now, the leaders of this firm relocated from Maryland here to Jacksonville after they had a knockout showing before some investors with OneSpark Ventures. And their product is shaking up the healthcare market. Elizabeth Benson is co-founder and CEO of B&G and joins us now in studio. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
And it's hard to believe that hundreds of people a day are dying due to just technology errors, communication mishaps. How is that even happening?
Well, there are a lot of provisions being taken to try to prevent that now, but the issue becomes an advanced technology which provides a lot of speed and efficiency, mm-hmm. and then the communication between people becomes lacking.
And you observed this up close as a nurse educator, correct? That's what got you onto this.
Yes, ma'am. We noticed that our students were more focused on the technology and skills and iPads rather than the interaction with the patient they were taking care of.
Okay. So you saw this firsthand, and then you decided to do something about it. You went before a panel of business leaders and potential investors. You had an idea for some more innovative clinical training. What happened next?
Well, much to our surprise but delight, they validated that our proof of concept was a good idea for a business. And though we had lack of business experience, we are experts in what we do know and recognize we needed experts in what we didn't know. So we reached out to the community, and the community of Jacksonville reached out to us with OneSpark, Chris Carter, and Kate Stewart from the the entrepreneur group here in Jacksonville, Community of Entrepreneurs. And they've hooked us up with people as advisors to build the business part. We are the clinical experts, but now we have a business.
And it's my understanding that when you made your pitch, you did something kind of dramatic. Can you tell me what happened?
Yes, when you don't trust someone, it's difficult to believe they're going to do what's best for you. So communication in business is very like communication in healthcare. And when I asked to thank the judges, I deliberately did not make eye contact or shake hands with two out of the five without giving them any previous notice to that. And there were some air sucking in the room at the time. And then I went on with my pitch and ignored all of their responses until I explained that just like in healthcare, if you're getting your blood drawn and no one talks to you like a person and they just come in because you're number 45 of the day, it doesn't give you a lot of trust that they're going to do it well.
And so you gave them a taste of that medicine in real time. That made a big impact, didn't it?
Yes, rather than tell them, I let them feel it.
You showed it to them. So because you portrayed this in that way, they bought your idea. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, we were pretty excited. It would have been an outstanding opportunity anyway, but to come in with a lot of passion and only a proof of concept where other people had products and had been in business for years, it was scary, but it was very exciting. And now, just about a year later, we've gone from the proof of concept to lab testing and field testing, and now we're actually selling the products.
And tell me about this product. This is a wearable clinical training device. What does it do?
Yes, ma'am. It allows students to practice blood draws or starting IVs safely on each other. And it also can be used on the mannequins that are already purchased by some of the labs. Since it has a protective layer and then real feel of skin and pre-filled blood vessels, the students may have not had any experience with that in their lives before. So when they're wearing it and a peer is coming at them, they get the feel of what it feels like to be on the other side of it, as well as having repeated practice and the opportunity to communicate with someone. Mm-hmm. And the real thing is that's really different and unique about this is that we had won a Microsoft Products and Services Award at OneSpark, which we used to develop an app. And the app tracks what the student does and what they speak and how they perform with their insertions.
So basically, you could take from your idea, which is so brilliant, the idea that every doctor should feel what it's like to be a patient. They'll deliver much better care.
Yes.
Isn't that basically it? That's in a nutshell?
All of us, yes.
Yeah. And so this idea has taken off, right?
It has, yes. We're selling to 9 different programs right now. We just started March 1st. And Tallahassee Community College is one of our lead schools, as is UNF right here in town.
Uh-huh.
And we're selling products for humans. And in May, we're field testing the same products for animals in veterinary medicine.
Wow. What advice do you have for people that are going to do what you did and go before some potential investors to try to get capital for their idea?
Make sure you really know that your product is needed and that your solution can take care of that need.
And you were sure?
I was sure.
It's B&G Educational Innovations. And by the way, because you had such a hit down here in Florida, you moved from Maryland to Florida.
We did.
To further this product.
We brought the business to Florida because they're the ones that encouraged us to do so.
Wow, such a great story. Thanks for joining us. Elizabeth Benson, she's co-founder and CEO of B&G Educational Innovations, shaking up the healthcare market, and keep us posted on your success.
Thank you very much.
In a moment, I'll look at weekend events, also a live in-studio performance from Jacksonville's rising star, Madison Carr. That's after this.
On the next Fresh Air, why some Congress members, psychiatrists, and ethicists are questioning President Trump's competency. Our guest will be Evan Osnos, who has written a new piece in The New Yorker about paths being considered to impeach the president or use the 25th Amendment to remove him from office. Osnos has been writing about Trump since his candidacy. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
My boss told me to do some research on improving employee morale. I asked the secretary what she thought, and she told me, darling, it does not matter because all this stuff is still going to float downstream. On the next Snap Judgment, from WNYC, Chain of Command, do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT. On WJCT's radio reading service at 8 a.m. weekday mornings, it's 3 hours of news, op-eds, and obituaries from your local newspaper. Here's a call we received from someone who listens online.
I'm very happy to tell you that my daughter found the app for the radio reading service on my tablet, and I'm using that, and it's excellent. I enjoy all the programs.
If you're living with blindness and want to hear what's in the paper, go to wjct.org/radio reading, underwritten by Florida Eye Specialists.
Today's segment with Carrie Speckman is brought to you in part by Blue Bamboo Asian Kitchen.
Welcome back. Well, Congregation Ahavat Chesed, a.k.a. The Temple, will hold its 6th annual Jacksonville Jewish Food Festival this Sunday. Festival spokesman Robert Cohen is here with the delicious details. And I'm thinking potato latkes, macaroons, and I've heard there's even another Bubby's Bake Off at this affair. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me. For those who are not fluent in Jewish culture, Bubby means grandma.
That's right.
And the Bake Off is a contest for bakers, both at the adult level and and kids. And you'd be surprised what the kids can come up with that really is delicious. It's a great opportunity for the community to come together around food and for the temple to open its doors to a lot of people who have never set foot in a synagogue.
And this is just an incredible culinary variety. These are food styles from the Mediterranean and from Europe that all together kind of form the Jewish food culture, right?
Well, that's right, because the Jews have been wandering the earth for thousands of years, and as they've moved around, they've picked up and incorporated the cooking styles in the lands that they lived in. Mm-hmm. This is an event that will get the practicalities at 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 in the afternoon on Sunday. It's all you can eat, and there's a lot to eat and a lot to sample.
Now we're talking, I'm looking at this list. This is just a partial list. Beef brisket, matzo ball soup, potato latkes, bagels, hummus, falafel, and more. A ton of desserts. And the whole baking contest, the Bubby's Bake Off. That sounds serious. You got some Bubbies going head-to-head here. That's a big deal.
It's a friendly competition. There's also a wine wall where people buy for $18, they get a bottle of wine, and it's kind of a blind bidding type thing, but there are all kinds of surprises there. It's a good dollar value, all you can eat, $25 a person or a family pack, which includes up to two adults and as many kids as you can bring for $75, and kids under three eat for free.
Very nice. And this is the 6th annual festival. People come from all over for this, as you said, whether or not they're members of the temple.
Well, and not only, you don't have to be Jewish to eat this food.
Sure.
In fact, it's an opportunity for people to expose themselves to Jewish culture and to walk away with a very full tummy.
Okay, so again, this is Sunday at the temple on San Jose Boulevard. Can people buy their tickets right on site?
They can buy it by going to thetemplejacksonville.org and buy them in advance, or they can buy them at the door.
Okay, this is coming up Sunday, the 6th annual Jewish Food Festival. Robert Cohen, you want to stick around while we talk about some other events?
Be interested to hear what's going on.
Okay, so whether you want some food on Sunday or maybe you want to check out the Tony Award-winning Kinky Boots or more, we've got lots of ideas for your weekend. From Kinky Boots to Ben Harper and more, here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, the corset-wearing Carrie Speckman is here today.
Well, I'm wearing it right now.
I have been advised that you need a corset.
Yeah, I think I got a hookup.
What do you need a corset for?
Well, wouldn't you like to know?
Yeah, I would like to know.
Maybe it's an event this weekend.
An event this weekend?
Maybe.
That you need a corset for.
Well, I'm just trying.
You know, there's Spanx. We got Spanx now. So why do you need a corset? What's going on, Spectator?
Spanx aren't doing it.
They're not going to get the job done?
No.
And you're going old school.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, we're listening to some music. Who is this?
I believe it's Eric Church.
Okay, Eric Church is coming to town. At the arena Friday night.
What's interesting is that there will be no opening act. And he and his band will play, and then they'll take an intermission and they'll come back and play some more, which I don't think he's ever done before.
Very nice. So go see him Friday. Also, tonight through Sunday, it's the Tony Award winning hit Kinky Boots.
Six time
Tony Award winning
musical.
I saw a picture of you on Facebook the other day wearing some bright red kinky
they
boots.
They were the kinky, not the kinky boots that are on stage, obviously.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're platforming. I don't know how people dance in them.
I know. But this is such a great story. It's based on a true story. It's about this struggling shoe factory in Northern England, and they revived themselves when
with these boots.
A drag queen in London asked them to start manufacturing a different kind of footwear. We spoke with actor Tom Cerata. He plays Mr. Price in the show. Take a listen.
The story is an incredible story. You know, you immediately, the audience gets sucked into the story. It has a fantastic message. You can change the world if you change your mind. Be who you want to be. It's very timely. But it also, the story is told with these incredible songs by Cyndi Lauper that are infectious. And the audience just jumps to their feet and yells and screams and cries sometimes. And also the script by Harvey Fierstein is hilarious.
There you go.
You had me at Cyndi Lauper.
Kinky Boots now through Sunday. By the way, it's too bad Harvey Fierstein couldn't be here in Jacksonville to like bring this all going. And I love that guy.
He is a character.
He's amazing. Okay, so that's happening through Sunday. Also, I want to make a quick plug for tomorrow, or actually today and tomorrow, the World Arts Film
Festival started yesterday.
It's going on at WJCT. This is an amazing film festival.
100 short films. They have panels, workshops, industry guests, art exhibits, receptions. You know, it's very good.
Try not to get too excited about this.
Well, no, it's now I have Harvey Fierstein voice.
Okay. So you need to kind of have a little bit of a scratch in the back of
your
throat.
Yes, I do, Melissa.
Yeah, to make that work. Okay. What else is happening, Spectator?
Well, has anyone said May the 4th be with you today?
No, they have not.
Well, May the 4th be with you.
Thank you,
Melissa.
Thank you, my Jedi sister.
I guess I should say May the 4th be with you, Melissa.
Is there some Star Wars thing today?
There's all kinds of Star Wars things. But this one is at Metro Entertainment Complex, which is always full of color and excitement and character. Anyway, they're having a Star Wars costume contest.
Drink
specials.
Very cool.
It's going to be
At the Metro
Entertainment Complex.
Oh,
not to be confused with the Metro Diner, because that would be really embarrassing.
That would not be a good thing.
No.
Okay. So May the 4th be with you. And then Friday night, coming to town, it's the Grammy Award-winning Ben Harper.
And I love Innocent Criminals.
I love him.
Will you be going?
No, but I love his music.
You love him. You don't love him that much.
I'm one of those people that gets invited to lots of things, but goes to very few, unfortunately.
Right.
I'm too tired.
But
it's Ben Harper coming to town Friday.
At
the Florida Theater. Saturday, it's Mocha Family Day. Come on out, celebrate the end of the school year there.
Art making, interactive fun. We'll have a sidewalk chalk competition. Four square ball games. I don't even know what that means. Project Atrium Films, pop-up tours, a few surprise guests.
And it's free.
It's free.
Free admission Saturday at Mocha.
Yes.
Right next door at the library.
Well, I should have mentioned. Oh, it's a Willow Branch library.
Oh, sorry. At the Willow Branch Jacksonville Library.
In Riverside,
it's a comic con.
It is.
Very fun.
It is a day of fun and nerdery. That's what they called it.
I love that. That's Saturday. Go out for that. Also Saturday at the Mosh, Jax Aquafest.
Aquafest. Immerse yourself in education. I stole that from their webpage. I didn't make that up on myself. It talks about clean water and why it's such a vital resource and what people can do to help keep it clean. They're going to have river tours, museum exhibits, an intertidal touch tank.
Okay. And last but not least, come on out to the Riverside Arts Market Saturday. All kinds of fun stuff for your pets.
Yes.
Happening.
Dogs.
Only dogs. And then Saturday night, the Cultural Council Arts Awards sold out.
But
you got a special treat here.
To our fabulous listeners, I know people who know people have released, it's sold out. Like it's the party of the year, the premiere arts and culture gala. They have released 10 tickets. They're not free. They've released 10 for people to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because our listeners are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm special.
Yeah, that's right. You're very special.
And I know people who know people.
This is well known.
If you go to my Facebook page, The Spectator, there is a link.
And a code word.
And 10 tickets. That's it. And if you were the first to buy tickets, you will go to the VIP reception as my guest.
Get out of here.
I know.
They get to party with the pink hair?
Speaking of which, I think I know the hostess of the
I'm the co-host. MC. I'm the co-MC with the great Darnell Smith.
I think I've heard a little something about you and Darnell touring around the city.
You'll have to just come to the show to see what's happening.
I heard it is quite fabulous.
But go to Carrie Speckman's Facebook page. It's The Spectator. And if you want a ticket to the Cultural Council Arts Awards, go there now. They are releasing 10 tickets only. You do have to pay for them through Carrie's website.
Correct. On
Facebook.
Give you the code word.
All right. I'll see you there.
I cannot even wait to see you there, Melissa.
In a moment, singer-songwriter Madison Carr.
What's up?
Oh, man, I love it.
I'm Joshua Johnson. On the next 1A, who owns America's land? West of the Mississippi, the federal government owns nearly half. East of the river, just 4%. It's a sore spot for Western farmers and ranchers and fuel for standoffs like the ones led by Clive and Bundy. How do we balance private ownership and environmental protection? Next time on 1A, weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Quick, give me the names of every state capital that include the word city. Come on, what's the holdup? I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Do you have way too much information floating around in your head? Then NPR's Ask Me Another might just be for you. It's a whole hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Oh, and the answers are Oklahoma City, Carson City, Jefferson City, and Salt Lake City. But you knew that, right?
Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. It's easy to listen to WJCT, even when you're not near a radio. Just visit WJCTnews.org from your phone or tablet. On our mobile site, you're just one click away from a 24-hour live stream of our programming, and you'll also have easy access to all of the top local news stories. Listen live on WJCT's mobile website, WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, singer-songwriter and Douglas Anderson High School student Madison Carr is an up-and-coming performer on the local scene. You can check her out this weekend when she plays the Gamble Rogers Music Festival in St. Augustine. We're so lucky we've got a preview right now as Madison Carr joins us for a live in-studio performance. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's so good to see you. And you're performing all over town, still in high school at Douglas Anderson, but you've really just come such a long way in a short time with your music. What's on tap for Gamble Rogers this weekend?
Thank you so much. Gamble Rogers is a music festival in honor of the Florida musician Gamble Rogers. And it's going to be Friday through Sunday, and it's only $10 for adults, and everyone 18 under is free. And I'll be one of the youth performers, and I'm performing at 1:30.
On Sunday?
Saturday.
On Saturday. And are you performing some original compositions?
Yes, ma'am. Mostly originals at this point, but I still like to throw some covers in there for fun.
Nice. And who are your influences? Who inspires your songwriting?
I could name a lot, but mostly it's Johnny Cash and John Lennon for me.
Wow. And still in high school, do you hope to perform and tour professionally once you're an adult? Is that your goal?
Yes, ma'am. I'd love to. You know, that would definitely be living a dream for me. So.
And you don't have to call me ma'am.
Thank you.
It's very polite, but gosh, it makes me feel so old. I mean, she is such a fresh face on the music scene and so talented. And we're so lucky to have you perform. Madison, what are you going to perform for us right now?
Thank you. This is a new original song called Hummingbird Quiet.
Here she is, Madison Carr.
I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Boil the sorrow, leave the rest all to time. No sleep left for me and no time to deny. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Heading out the coast, the mountains always win. Tell me it's like home if you don't have any kin. Would you make my insides feel like honey? Warm and sweet and sticky. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Don't know where I'll let time decide. The roads of my mind all wind and wind. And I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. I used to overthink, but now I overbear. Do you remember when we put bugs in our hair? Got them in a jar and shook them all around. Wear them on our head like a chemical crown. Now you're fast asleep and you may never know why. I do the things I do, but I do them all for you. So I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. Boil the sorrow, leave the rest all to time. No sleep left for me and no time to deny. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind. I'm leaving tomorrow with the hummingbird quiet in my mind.
Carr, what a talent you are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for performing here.
Thank you for having me.
Go see Madison Carr Saturday at the Gamble Rogers Music Festival in St. Augustine. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A is up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.